Hello, and welcome to Babe Waves on CITR 101.9 FM. We have a super exciting episode today. We're talking about masturbation and the vagina monologues. We're all super stoked. We're joined in studio today by Michaela, Elizabeth, and Drew, all of whom are performing in V-Day's Vagina Monologue Extravaganza to do some of their monologues. Hey, how are you guys doing?
Good.
Great.
Awesome.
Excited to be here.
Do you guys want to say the dates of your show just for the listeners to know?
Sure. So last night was actually our opening night. We run until the 11th, and all our shows are at 7:30 in the Egg, the theater in the Nest.
Cool. Exciting. So which of you guys wants to start?
Sure. I'll go ahead.
Cool.
This monologue is called Because He Liked to Look at It. This is how I came to love my vagina. It's embarrassing because it's not politically correct. I mean, I know it should have happened in a bath with salt grains from the Dead Sea, Enya playing, and me loving my woman self. I know the story. Vaginas are beautiful. Our self-hatred is only the internalized repression and hatred of the patriarchal culture. It isn't real. Pussies unite. I know all of it. Like, if we'd grown up in a culture where we were taught that fat thighs were beautiful, we'd all be pounding down milkshakes and Krispy Kremes, lying on our backs, spending our days thigh expanding. But we didn't grow up in that culture. I hated my thighs, and I hated my vagina even more. I thought it was incredibly ugly. I was one of those women who had looked at it, and from that moment on, wished I hadn't. It made me sick. I pitied anyone who had to go down there. In order to survive, I began to pretend there was something else between my legs. I imagined furniture. Cozy futons with light cotton comforters, little velvet settees, leopard rugs, or pretty things, silk handkerchiefs, quilted pot holders, or place settings. I got so accustomed to this that I lost all memory of having a vagina. Whenever a man was inside me, I pictured him inside a mink-lined muffler or a Chinese bowl. Then I met Bob. Bob was the most ordinary man I had ever met. He was thin and tall and nondescript and wore khaki tan clothes. Bob did not like spicy foods or listen to Prince. He had no interest in sexy lingerie. In the summer, he spent time in the shade. He did not share his inner feelings. He didn't have any problems or issues, and he wasn't even an alcoholic. He wasn't very funny or mysterious or articulate. He wasn't mean or unavailable. He wasn't self-involved or charismatic. He didn't drive fast. I didn't particularly like Bob. I would have missed him altogether if he hadn't picked up my change that I dropped on the deli floor. When he handed me back my quarters and pennies and his hand accidentally touched mine, something happened. I went to bed with him. That's when the miracle occurred. Turned out that Bob loved vaginas. He was a connoisseur. He loved the way they felt, the way they tasted, the way they smelled. But most importantly, he loved the way they looked. He had to look at them. First time we had sex, he told me he had to see me. "I'm right here," I said. "No, you," he said. "I have to see you." "Turn on the light," I said, thinking he was a weirdo and freaking out in the dark. He turned on the light. Then he said, "Okay, I'm ready. Ready to see you." "Right here," I waved. "I'm right here." Then he began to undress me. "What are you doing, Bob?" I said. "I need to see you," he replied. "But "You've seen a red leather couch before," I said. Bob continued. He would not stop. I wanted to throw up and die. "This is, awfully intimate," I said. "Can't you just do it?" "No," he said. "It's who you are. I need to look." I held my breath. He looked and looked. He got breathy and his face changed. He didn't look ordinary anymore. He looked like a hungry beast. "You are so beautiful," he said. "You're elegant and deep and innocent and wild." "You saw that there?" I said. It was like he read my palm. "I saw that," he said, "and more, much, much more." Bob stayed looking for almost an hour, as if he were studying a map, observing the moon, staring into my eyes. But it was my vagina. In the light, I watched him looking, and he was so genuinely excited, so peaceful, so euphoric, that I began to get wet and turned on. I began to see myself the way he saw me. I began to feel beautiful and delicious, like a great painting or a waterfall. Bob wasn't afraid. He wasn't grossed out. I began to feel proud, began to swell, began to love my vagina. And Bob? He lost himself there. And I was there with him, in my vagina, and we were gone.
Bravo! Thank you so much, Michaela. That was awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, just...
Sick. Oh my gosh. I'll just scoot over.
Next up we have...
Elizabeth?
The ever effervescent Elizabeth. With her take on it. So, whenever you're ready.
Mine's called Reclaiming Cunt. I usually do it with another person, actually, so you'll have to come see the proper show to get the full shebang, but this is a little taster. We've created a map of vagina-friendly cities. Welcome, UBC. They're wild for vaginas in Pittsburgh. In fact, a woman from Pittsburgh was obsessed about a particular word, a pejorative word used to describe the vagina. Her mission was to reconceive that word. I call it cunt. I've reclaimed it. Cunt. I really like it. Cunt. Listen to it. Cunt. Cavern. Cackle. Clit. Cute. Come closed. Closed inside. Inside ka. Then you. Then ka. Then curvy. Inviting shark skin. You. Uniform. Under. Up. Urge. Ugh. Ugh. You. Then N, then cun. Snug letters fitting perfectly together. N. Nest, now, nexus, nice, nice. Always depth, always round in uppercase. Cun. Cun. N, a jagged, wicked electrical pulse. Nee! Then soft N, warm N. Cun. Cun. Then T, then sharp, certain, tangy T. Texture, take, tent. Tight, tantalizing, tensing, taste, tendrils, time, tactile, tell me, cunt, cunt, say it, tell me, cunt, 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 C-U-N-T, what's that spell? Cunt!
Bravo. And wrapping it up is Drew. Whenever you are ready, go wild.
Cool. So just for a little bit of context here, the Vagina Monologues is a collection of monologues based on interviews with women in the 70s. So I'll just read the intro to mine, if y'all don't mind. A group of women between the ages of 65 and 75 was interviewed. These interviews were the most poignant, possibly because many of these women had never had a vagina interview before. One woman, who was 72, had never seen her vagina. She washed herself in the shower and the bath, but never with conscious intention. She had never had an orgasm. At 72, she went into therapy, as they do in New York. And with the help of her therapist, she went home one afternoon by herself, lit some candles, took a bath, played some music, and she got down with herself. She said it took her over an hour because she was so arthritic, but when she finally found her clitoris, she said she cried. This monologue is for her. Down there. Why, I haven't been down there since 1953. No, it had nothing to do with Eisenhower. No, it's a cellar down there. It's very damp, clammy. You don't want to go down there. Trust me, you'd get sick. Suffocating, very nauseating. The smell of the clamminess and the mildew and everything. Whew, it smells unbearable, gets in your clothes. No, there was no accident down there. It didn't blow up or catch fire or anything. It wasn't so dramatic. I mean, well, never mind. No, never mind. I can't talk to you about this. What's a smart girl like you going around talking to old ladies about their down theirs for? We didn't do this kind of a thing when I was a girl. What? Oh, Jesus. Okay. Well, there was this boy, Andy Leftkov. He was cute. Well, I thought so. And tall, like me, and I really liked him. He asked me out for a date in his car. I can't tell you this. I can't do this. Talk about down there. You just know it's there. Like the cellar. There's rumbles down there sometimes. You can hear the pipes, and things get caught there. Little animals and things. It gets wet. And sometimes people have to plug up the leaks, otherwise the door stays closed. You forget about it. I mean, it's part of the house, but you don't see it or think about it. It has to be there, though, because every house needs a cellar, otherwise the bedroom would be in the basement. Oh, Andy. Andy Leftkov, right. Andy was very good-looking. He was a catch, that's what we called it in my day. We were in his car, a new white Chevy Bel Air. And I remember thinking my legs were too long for the seat. I have long legs. And they were smushed up against the dashboard. And I was looking at my big kneecaps when he just kissed me in this surprisingly take-me-by-control, like they do in the movies kind of way. And I got excited. So excited. And, well, there was a flood down there. I couldn't control it. It was like this force of passion, this river of life just flooded out of me right through my panties, right onto the car seat of his new white Chevy Bel Air. It wasn't pee, and it was smelly. Well, frankly, I didn't really smell anything at all, but Andy said that it smelled like sour milk, and it was staining his car seat. I was a stinky, weird girl, he said. Now, I wanted to explain that his kiss had caught me off guard. I wasn't normally like this. I tried to wipe up the flood with my dress. It was a new yellow primrose dress. It looked so ugly with the flood on it. Andy drove me home without saying another word. And when I got out of his car and closed that door, I closed the whole store. Locked it. Never opened for business again. I dated some after that, but the idea of flooding made me too nervous. I never even got close again. I used to have dreams. Crazy dreams. Oh, they're dopey. Why? Burt Reynolds. I don't know why. He never did much for me in life, but in my dreams, it was always Burt and I. Burt and I, Burt and I. It was always the same general dream. We'd be out, Burt and I. It was some restaurant, the kind you find in Atlantic City, all big with the chandeliers and stuff, and thousands of waiters with the vests. Burt would give me this orchid corsage, and I'd pin it on my blazer. And we'd laugh. We were always laughing. Bert and I laughing, laughing. And we'd eat shrimp cocktail. Huge shrimp. Fabulous shrimp. And we'd laugh more. We were very happy together. And then he'd look into my eyes, and he'd pull me to him in the middle of the restaurant. And just as he was about to kiss me, the whole restaurant would start to shake. And pigeons would fly out from under the table. I don't know what those pigeons were doing there. And the flood would come straight from down there. It would pour out of me. It would pour. And there would be fish inside it and little boats. And the whole restaurant would fill with my flood. And Bert would be standing waist deep in it, looking horribly disappointed in me that I'd done it again. Horrified as he watched his friends, you know, Dean Martin and the like, swim past us in their tuxedos and evening gowns. Well, I don't have those dreams anymore. And not since they took away just about everything connected with down there. They moved out the uterus, the tubes, the whole works. The doctor thought he was being funny. He told me, if you don't use it, you lose it. But really, I found out it was cancer. And everything around it had to go. But who needs it anyway? Highly overrated. I've done other things. I love the dog shows. I sell antiques. You ask me what would it wear? What kind of a question is that? What would it wear? It would wear a big sign, closed due to flooding. What would it say? I told you, it's not like that. It's not like a person who speaks. It stopped being a thing that talked a long time ago. It's a place. A place you don't go. It's closed up under the house, is down there. You happy? You made me talk. You got it out of me. You got an old lady to talk about her down there. You feel better now? You know, actually, you're the first person I ever told about this, and I feel a little better.
Yes! I'm just gonna play a couple of PSAs, and then we have an interview with Elise, Hayone's friend. And we're gonna get into that was like the perfect segue into like the masturbation part of the episode. So stay tuned.
People, let me tell you about my best.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends. Members get discounts on Main Street at
Hot Art, Wet City, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, East Vanity Parlor, The Wallflower Modern Diner, RX Comics, Dandelion Records and Emporium, The Rag Machine, Neptune Records, The Regional Assembly of Text, Devil May Wear, Lucky's Comics, Book Warehouse, On the French Hair Design, Red Cat Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, True Value Vintage, and I Found Gallery, and the Biltmore Cabaret.
What would we do without our friends?
Saturday, February 11th, George Bear presents Bob Marley's birthday bash at the Grandview Legion Hall on Commercial Drive. Come enjoy Jamaican food and refreshments and listen to the East Van All-Stars live. Get your tickets at Zulu Records, High Life Records, and Butter King.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Bay Waves. Today's episode is going to be about the vagina monologues and masturbation stories. Today here in the studio, I have a really good friend of mine, Alice, and she doesn't know what we are talking about. She doesn't know what questions am I going to ask or anything. It's a bit of an experiment. Hello, Alice.
Hi.
Basically, I want to talk to you about masturbation.
Okay.
How do you feel about the subject? Would you be interested in talking to me, or is it a bit too awkward?
It's not awkward. I feel like awkward is the wrong word. It's just not discussed, right?
Definitely. I actually approached a couple of people that would be didn't want to talk about it. They didn't even know the questions I was gonna ask, but they were hesitant to talk about this subject. Why do you think that happened?
Were they female?
Yes, both of them.
Yeah, I kind of wonder whether that's part of it, because think about it, even in terms of like what we see on TV on the screen, right? Like male masturbation compared to female? How often is that really portrayed in like mass media? I don't think it is as much. So yeah, I don't think people like have it such an open conversation because of like things like that. I feel like some people are really guarded about the idea because it's like a very, it's not personal though, is it? Like it's not that much different to what you do with another person.
Still, it's much more taboo, right?
Yeah, totally.
Well, my personal experience is that I grew up, my parents are super, I have a girlfriend, so they're really understanding and obviously they don't have any problem or anything. But I grew up thinking that masturbation was something like, not dirty, but like weird. I don't know, it wasn't like an open conversation in my house.
Yeah, I don't think it ever really like came up in my house. My dad's generally quite like jokey about things, sex and boyfriends, girlfriends, whatever the conversation is, like, do you have a boyfriend? No. Well, do you have a girlfriend? Joking things, and it's always been that way, but I don't think it's ever like a thing that's been discussed so much in the household, more so with friends. But again, there's a certain level, like I feel roommates, for example, like roommates maybe you discuss it with because you're kind of living together, you become this like weird paradox between a friendship and a family, right? And you get to see everybody else's quirks in terms of, are they messy, do they leave hair all over the shower, do you know, these kinds of things. So it becomes a little bit more of a phase, and I think especially with female roommates even more so, I think, sometimes than in certain relationships, guy-girl relationship.
I also felt like growing up it was more of a taboo thing, because not because my parents didn't want to talk about it, but because it never came up. I know that if I would have asked, or if I had any doubts about it, they would have been really there for me and explained things. But because I never asked, it was not something that we talked about.
No, it wasn't. And I think the first time really that I was aware of it, but the first time it was ever really discussed that I remember was with a friend who was 2 years older than me. Yeah, so she was probably the closest in terms of a person there who's somebody older to look up to, who had that conversation. I don't know, she must have been about like 15 or 16. So I was like 13 or 14 around the time. And I remember coming up in conversation, and it was very much the like logistical, like, what do you actually do? It wasn't anything to do with like, well, why, or, you know, anything around that. It was very much the like point one to be in terms of like, what actually is it?
Did you ever have a class in school that taught you anything about this?
I mean, you do sex ed class, which is, sometimes people say a little bit too early, you do it around 10 or 11. I had some like illness off school, so I kind of missed half of the sex ed classes. So other than the real like science part of it, you didn't really have that conversation very much in school. And I think there's still taboos over what schools should be talking about with students and what they should leave to the parents. Like, what is it where that becomes, that's a family conversation to have. That's something that is to do with their decision of how they want to discuss that with their children, compared to what should actually be discussed in the classroom. And I think, like, especially in those teenage years, you're like completely confused. Everyone talks about it, but not openly, and everyone has all these like weird questions. I remember being in film studies class when I was like 17, and it's like 20 something guys and 3 girls in this class, right? And we had to talk about taboos in film.
I went to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, and I met the love of my life. We just celebrated our 40th anniversary.
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now the president of the Vegan Hot Dog Appreciation Society.
After going to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I've successfully synthesized the vaccine for 2 left feet. Now everybody can dance.
Thanks to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR, I'm now nominated for a Daytime Emmy Award.
If you want to change your life, come to Volunteer Wednesdays at CITR from 11 to 1 every week. No experience is necessary.
Thank you, Volunteer Wednesdays. Ladies and gentlemen, we have entered a soundstage at
CITR
studio for a visit with
the folks who are
directing the exciting young star
Dama
Dora
and
guest
Vin.
The Real World.
The Real World is the UBC Film Society's radio show.
We talk about
events,
actors,
directors,
and genres.
We come up with most of the genres.
And that's what makes it so jazzy.
It's a lot of fun and games, except not that many games.
If you think you can handle all of this, tune in Fridays from 11 to 12 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Hello, welcome back to Bay Waves on CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territories here on UBC campus in Vancouver, BC. Today's episode, we're with the Gender Empowerment Collective, if you didn't know, and today's episode is all about masturbation and the vagina monologues. Michaela, Elizabeth, and Drew just performed some like really primo quality content, kind of a little showcase for the people, and also plugging their show, the V-Day performances of Vagina Monologues, started yesterday, going on until the 11th in the Egg. What time is that started?
7:30.
Is it every night?
Yeah.
Impressive. we have a few questions, kind of like jumping right into the masturbation part of the episode.
Ooh,
yeah.
You do.
Everyone, I just want everyone to, I want to like preface it with like only share what you're comfortable with sharing. There's no pressure to do anything. Just be as safe and comfortable as possible. It's all anyone really wants. And then also the questions that we are asking are from a women's gender and sexuality studies class at the College of New Jersey, and it's all kind of centered around the vagina monologues and blah blah blah. So let's freaking do it. So how do you guys feel about how the vagina monologues represents gender?
I'll speak to that. I think we have to consider when the Vagina Monologues was written. It was written in the 70s. Eve Ensler, the playwright, went and interviewed women all over the world, talking about different women's issues. And one of the things we've talked about as a cast, and we talk about also in our talkbacks after the show, is that unlike the title suggests, a vagina isn't what makes a woman. You can identify as a woman and not have a vagina. The vagina monologues now in 2016 is pretty dated, because if you are an intersectional feminist, it leaves out a lot of aspects of intersectionality that we realize in 2016, which maybe wasn't so prevalent in the 70s.
And in 2017, I think,
yeah,
as well.
Oh, 2017. Oh.
Nailed it. It's all right.
How have you guys adapted the performances to kind of like bring in this intersectionality and these different forms of representation and identification, if you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've definitely cut some lines that just kind of don't apply anymore. We've maybe, I don't want to say edited, but just sort of cleaned up some stuff in the show, and decided altogether to not do certain pieces simply because they don't represent what we want to represent. And that's another thing that I think the talk back after the show covers, which is a discussion between the audience and the actors after the show, which anyone is welcome to stay for if they come to the show. We cover a lot of that stuff in that talk.
How many cast members are there?
15?
More than that.
Whoa, that's huge.
I think.
No.
15.
Around 15.
Oh, yeah.
Ish. Give or take. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Do you think that there is an essence? I mean, this is also open to everyone. Do you think that there is an essence that connects all women? I don't like this question. The answer is no. I think I'm going to move on. I don't think that's very applicable to like reality. What do you think these monologues show us about how gender is constructed? Ooh, poignant pregnant pause.
I'm 9 months pregnant.
I mean, I think a lot of them, especially because they were written in the 70s, you know, a lot of it has to do with pretty mainstream, like, femininity. There's one piece, a group piece, where it's just a bunch of us ladies talking about menstruation and like the taboos around it, you know, and our fears as young girls surrounding getting our periods and I guess just puberty in general. A lot of that is very, for some reason, nerve-wracking in our culture.
No, totally. Last year on the Gender Empowerment Collective, is kind of like, it's a reinvention of the women's collective. So this year the show is called Babe Waves. We're trying to be way more inclusive, which is amazing. And last year it was Lady Radio. And we had an episode on menstruation, and it was so lovely to hear all these people talking about their experiences with it. And we actually got, like, someone had been listening in their car, a male identifying person had, and he wrote us a message on Facebook that was like, thank you so much for this episode. Like, it was awesome to hear you guys talking about it. And it felt so nice. It was like, yeah, like, we're doing good. Like, like, once you have those conversations and you're, like, participating in it, you're like, this is so important. This is so fun. And I think it feels, like, very cathartic.
Yeah. No, it was weird because, like, with that scene, it generally felt like we were all just talking, sharing our own experiences, because half the things that were being said, I, like, completely, I was like, oh, yeah, I get hangry, and, like, oh, yeah, that happens too. And it's weird because, like, that was written in the 70s, but some of it is still so prevalent, but there is still certain things that, like, luckily nowadays we're more open with, like, certain things that aren't really brought up in the vagina monologues. Because, like, a lot of them is, yeah, it's, like, kind of, like, finding your own, like, way in your vagina and, like, having good experiences and, like, bad experiences. But I'd say the most, like, prevalent one, like, there is a I beat the boy out of my girl.
There is a transgendered
monologue
piece,
work.
Yeah. Which I think is great because, you know, it covers some of the issues that are more relevant today. Although, I mean, we do acknowledge in our talk back that we had no transgender people
applicants
to perform it. But we decided to do it anyway because we thought it was important. So
yeah, to try and work with like the people that showed interest in the show, because there are a lot of pieces where like it's like a woman of color would do this, but we just had to kind of work with what we wanted and also didn't want to be like, oh, we need to like find someone for this monologue.
Yeah,
that
right.
gets very awkward very quickly.
Yeah, you don't want to recruit for diversity.
Do you think that the vagina monologues represents differences among women as their identities intersect, race, sexuality, class, religion, and nationality? Or do you think it is like a pretty like one-sided, like largely one-sided like conversation?
No, I don't think it's all one-sided. There are monologues that do speak from a different side. The vagina monologues has a lot of monologues, and then based on your production and the director, they select monologues. So the ones we're presenting are not necessarily a full representation of everything that Eve Ensler's original vagina monologues included. And also, she wrote a sequel called A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, and A Prayer. She wrote that in the 90s to update. So in that show, there are definitely way more, there is way more diversity within that. But again, the 90s is still kind of outdated for where we are in 2017.
Why do you guys think that that second kind of like sequel didn't gain as much traction as the original?
I think maybe the original is just sort of a like a classic. It was iconic, especially, you know, within that wave of feminism that maybe in the 90s it was just kind of overlooked because, you know, people had already seen this like crazy piece of work that she did before, and it had gotten so big.
I think even the name too, like Vagina Monologues, is very like, I know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Whereas like the sequel, quote unquote, to it is a bit more like, this could mean a bunch of different things, and maybe that could have something to do with it.
Cool. Sick. Let's just like jump right into masturbation. I loved your monologue because for listeners who didn't hear, it was like a senior woman like talking about like her relationship with masturbation and her relationship with her vagina. And I think that masturbation and menstruation are like pretty akin in that like it kind of feels like masturbation is where menstruation was like 5 years ago. Like it's starting to become more easily talked about, but it's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. Whereas like menstruation, it's like, yeah, like about my period. Sure. Yeah, no, exactly. So I think this is like, I'm like really into this episode. I also really, I'm interested to hear what everyone has to say, if only because like, I don't masturbate and I like, I don't engage with it that much. It's still like such a, I think, like important experience of like a human in the world. Like everyone, like I don't like saying everyone does it because like I don't, but like it is kind of like the world does this and it needs to be talked about.
It's a thing out
it's
there.
It's a thing, yeah.
Paulina was like pretty excited about this episode.
I think initially when I heard that there was an episode on masturbation, I was like, yeah. And then as we got closer, I was like, oh my God, am I going to have to like talk about personal experiences, which is just kind of weird because I think you become weirded out because of what society tells you about like, don't talk about this, especially if you're a woman kind of thing. But you hear men talk about it all the time, which is really interesting. What was the question?
Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's more acceptable for men identifying folks to talk about it and then like converse this?
I think this just has a lot to do with the fact that in the past, especially men have been able to express themselves more, and women have been silenced a lot in terms of like their sexuality. And because of that, masturbation is this like very taboo topic to talk about, especially for women. And Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was thinking about during Michaela's monologue how, like, she was, like, so scared. Like, the character's, like, so scared of her vagina. And she can't even, like, she didn't even feel comfortable talking about it with herself, let alone, like, other people, like, other women, let alone, like, other, like, people. And I feel like, within male communities, it's easier to be like, yeah, my dick, like, let's talk about this. Whereas, like, it's like, oh, like, my little, like, China bowl. Like, like, the comfortability with, like, having the conversations is, like, the vagina is just so much more, like, taboo than the penis for, like, some reason. That's just what I was thinking about when you were doing yours. How did you feel about doing that monologue?
So this is my second year in V-Day. And last year, it definitely was one of the monologues that made me more uncomfortable. I actually did Drew's monologue last year.
Oh, cool.
But as I approached this year, I definitely wanted to do something that challenged me. So I love my vagina. I've never had a problem with that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But I definitely, it's a weird thing to talk about something that personal and to talk about sex that personally. But this monologue was great for me. It definitely, I think it's something every year that I guess it's only 2 years that I've been involved. It pushes me to be able to talk about things and think about things and connect with things about myself and about being a woman that were uncomfortable before. And I think that's one of the great parts about being in or coming to see the vagina monologues is that we talk about everything. And I think it's really powerful to be in a group of people where you can have those conversations.
I think so too. I think that's like my favorite thing about the gender empowerment and last year's Women's Collective. It was just like, here's like a space where we can just like have convos.
Speaking of masturbation,
on topic.
So you said you don't do it. I do it. But what I wanted to say is that I find, so thinking of what do you masturbate with, and thinking of porn, and so I have a girlfriend right now, and I find it super disgusting and offensive how horribly wrong is lesbian sex on those porn sites. So I cannot masturbate to that because I'm just so disgusted by the way women are portrayed in this
like medium.
Yeah, in this medium. And it's so fucked up that I cannot masturbate to that. Like I get completely, I cannot do it. And I rather watch two guys, gay guys, than two women because it's so fucked up how women, lesbians are portrayed. Mm. It's terrible. Such a turn off.
Have you seen the movie The Kids Are All Right?
No.
It's about this lesbian couple and they're like kids. They had these kids with a sperm donor. It doesn't really matter. But they, like, one of their kids walks in on them, like, getting hot and bothered to male, like, gay male porn. And they're like, your guys are gay. Like, it doesn't make any sense. And they're like, you know what? Like, the body's complicated. Like, so funny. Thank you for bringing up porn. I remember, like, when I was younger, I would try to masturbate. It's just, like, really not for me. And I would try to watch porn, and I, like, couldn't get through a video. Like, I would start it, like, it didn't matter who the couple was or, like, if it was, like, a group or not. Like, I was just, like, everything about it was just so kind of, like, aggressive to me. But at the beginning of the year, Pauline and I got matching tattoos, and we were just, like, sitting in my room, like, in my living room talking about I forget how porn came up, and everyone was kind of like, oh, I can't watch it. And this one girl was like, I love it. Like, I watch it all the time. Which I thought was really cool, because I do think of it as, like, a very male thing to sit, like, if only because, like, when I was on Reddit when I was younger, it'd be like, guys, just, like, going home watching porn and masturbating every day. And, like, the idea, I was like, you know what, go you. Like, you are a woman-identifying person who, like, enjoys what I thought was like quite a violent like portrayal, but she was like super into it. And she was like, yeah, I love it. Which I was like team her.
Yeah, I don't know. I do watch porn. That being said, a lot less than I used to. I started masturbating like at a much younger age kind of thing. And I don't know, like I started using a computer when I was super young. So it was something that I don't know how it happened. It was probably like doing something and then like an ad popped up and I was like, what is this? And then so
the rest is history.
And the rest is history, yeah, except I guess it's hard because now I understand how different that is from what sex can really be like with somebody else as a personal experience. And it seems very impersonal. So it's kind of one of those things where it has to be a very specific kind of video. Otherwise, I'm like, I'd rather just not watch any of this kind of thing.
Yeah, you're basically browsing for like half an hour and then
I'm so picky
and then I'm like, no, it's not worth it. Whatever.
I love there's this Amy Schumer skit where she's like porn from the woman's point of view, and it's just like gross, just like this guy's like armpit for like 15 minutes. Like she's trying to have an intimate moment, he's like slapping her like hand away. It's so funny. And it's, but it is kind of like that other thing is like the other flip side to like if you don't have, I don't know, but like this idea also that like women don't have fun having sex a lot of the time. So like POV female porn is just kind of like icky and like unpleasant.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe I haven't searched for it enough. But, like, I don't think I would find that appealing, which I don't know why. I also used to – I feel like I also started really young, which is weird.
No, it's not.
Oh, well, maybe – I don't know. Maybe just looking back, I'm like, wow, whoa, wait. That I was, like, little. What? but no, I wasn't like crazy little or anything. I don't be concerned about me. Anyway.
No one was.
Yeah, beautiful. I definitely, and I did used to watch porn. I used to, because it wasn't, sometimes even, it wasn't even like a sexual thing, like as sexual as it could be. It was just like so crazy to watch these people. Like,
it's just an experience. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
That,
you like know, like, I didn't know that the body could do that.
Yeah.
And
sensory overload.
As like a kid, you know, like watching this shit. But yeah, I definitely don't watch it as often. It's all in the brain, baby. It's, yeah, like, I just don't think, like, I don't know. I try not to use, stuff like that because it feels, yeah, like impersonal and less authentic. I don't use like aids anymore. I don't use like toys or anything anymore. I don't know.
I'm kind of the same. Like right now I don't use toys or anything anymore, but I had this thing that I did when I was, I don't know, like preteen kind of age. Like I started pretty young too, but when I was around that age, I got into online like sex stories. So not,
oh my, not
read those, yeah. Read those. Yeah.
So what's my body doing? I don't understand.
Yeah. So I wouldn't masturbate to pornography in like a movie, but I would like read these things and masturbate to that because it wasn't, there would be tons written from a woman's point of view and it was personal and intimate and like sensual, whereas porn that is just, you know, Pornhub is aggressive and demeaning and etc.
It's just made for men, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the majority of it.
That's like, I started kind of late, I guess. I was also very confused, I think due to the media as well, that like, you just see movies and you see like guys that, yeah, will like crack a blanket and you're like, okay, well like they're supposed to do it all the time. And then if you see like a movie about...
What a visual. I love it.
It's from Bridesmaids. But then you, like,
you gotta, yeah. No plagiarism here. Yeah. Give credit for
relatable, credit. Yeah. But then you see, like, a video about, I just remember this movie, The To-Do List. I don't know if you guys ever, like, heard of it. And, like, she just had to, like, check off a bunch of, like, sexual things. And one was, like, to masturbate. And, like, I remember hearing people, like, talk about it, being like, ew, she's so, like, sexually aggressive doing all this stuff. And I was like, this, what? Like, this, that's not even a movie for guys because that's so, like, normal. But, like, talking about books, I remember when I was, like, really little or whatever, like, when Twilight was out. And I, like, read it, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm, like, caught and hot and bothered reading this. But I didn't understand it. And then when I was older, I was like, oh, you're allowed to, like, masturbate as a girl? Like, oh, fuck yeah.
I recently had a memory. My sister and I used to have piano lessons at this woman's house, and there was a library, like, just around the corner. So I would go to my lesson, she would wait at the library, then we'd switch out. And I remember I just, like, had a recent memory of, like, going upstairs and, like, sitting in, like, in between the bookshelves and reading, like, dirty books and being like, oh, my God! And,
but
like,
also, yeah.
Yeah, like, six-year-old Dora was like, this is awesome. Like, what's going on? Like, just... the fun fact about me.
I completely forgot about erotic literature. I used to go on those sites too, but I forgot about that. A tip for you is that any books by Haruki Murakami can be pretty good and, like, pretty sensual. Maybe just, like, one book, because it gets a bit redundant if you, like, read all of them, but that can be... I also have a confession, so this is kind of funny. In my final year of high school, there was, like, this huge group of, like, rugby boys, and they all shared one account because there's this really, like, privileged white, like, rich dude, and he had an account on Bang Bros, like, a subscription for a year, and so all of them would use the same account.
Bang Bros?
And I had a friend on the rugby, like, team. And they were joking. They're like, haha, like, this is a password. And then I was like, that's a password. I was like, save it for memory for later. And, like, I used it.
What is Bang Bros?
It's just, I guess it's like you have to pay for it every year. There's, so, like, a, like, subscription.
Is it better than Pornhub?
I guess so, because you, like, don't have to, like, sort through it. You know what I mean? Like, there's
just
a lot of sorting.
Just, like, kind of,
yeah, I don't know.
Intense.
It is intense and, like, very, yeah. But that's fine. I was like, free and don't have to sort for a half an hour. So
the password's 6969.
Yeah.
We actually, that's all we have time for today, which is so sad because this was, like, the best conversation ever. Thank you so much, Michaela, Elizabeth, and Drew for coming on the show. For the Night Jenna Monologues, In the Egg, In the Nest, every night. Started last night until the 11th at 7:30 p.m. It's freaking beautiful and awesome. Yay. We're just going to play this last song, Winona's Big Brown Beaver by Primus. And then we're going to be followed up by Are You Aware on CITR 101.9 FM. This has been Babe Waves. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Cigars and he can't get up his nose. He got wind of the big brown beaver, so he thought he'd dig himself a peek. But the beaver was quick, then he grabbed him by the kiwis and he ate. sure do love this big brown beaver, and I wish I did have a pair. Well, the beaver once slept for 7 days, and it gave us all an awful fright. So I tickled.